Have you ever felt like you're just constantly trying to catch up with new information, especially, in the fast-paced world of tech and business? It's like you want to be well-informed, you really crave those aha moments, but then information overload, it's just a constant battle.
It absolutely is.
Yeah.
And it's not just us as individuals. Businesses, especially in the software as a service or SaaS space, have faced this exact same thing. But like on an organizational scale, how do they truly understand what their users need and, how their products are performing? Not just superficially, but deep down,
Yeah.
fundamentally. And how do they adapt quickly?
That's a really powerful way to frame it. Yeah. So, how do we move from that feeling, that information overwhelm, to getting insights you can actually use? That's exactly what we're diving into today. We're going to explore how SaaS companies are making this fundamental transformation in how their software learns and improves, moving from those traditional, often quite slow methods to, well, cutting-edge AI-driven systems. So, our mission here is to unpack these really significant shifts happening in SaaS analytics, explore the best practices making companies, way more responsive, more customer-centric, and give you the essential insights without feeling completely swamped by all the details.
Okay, let's
Let's
get into it.
Let's do it. What's truly fascinating here is that the whole foundation of how SaaS products improve has just undergone this radical shift. Historically, it was very human intensive, almost like operating a massive machine with lots of manual levers,
Sounds incredibly inefficient. Can you paint a clearer picture? Like, how cumbersome was that old way for product teams? Oh, think about it. Companies would manually collect feedback through things like NPS, CSAT, maybe CES surveys. They'd have to wade through tons of customer support tickets, conduct user interviews, meticulously sift through session recordings, analyze heat maps, behavioral analytics tools. Then the product teams would spend, literally weeks manually poring over all this data, just trying to spot patterns and pain points.
And this led to what you called periodic improvement cycles. Rawr, that sounds incredibly slow.
It was, yeah. We're talking weeks, or sometimes even months, between collecting that initial feedback, analyzing it manually, then implementing changes, and then finally measuring the results, often using like A/B testing and more surveys. The workflows were largely static. They required constant human intervention, manual development cycles, just to change anything. So if a user had a new need or found a big bug, you had to wait ages for the company to even realize it, let alone fix it and get a new version out.
Okay, so if the old way was so slow, what's the big breakthrough? What lets companies break free from that cycle? I keep hearing about agentic AI. What does agentic actually mean here?
That's the key term, yeah. And it's truly the game changer. Agentic AI isn't just reactive. It refers to AI systems designed to operate autonomously, usually with defined goals. They take proactive actions, make decisions independently, without needing constant human prompting. So instead of waiting for a human to tell them what to do, they sort of observe, learn, and act. And this transforms that slow manual process into these autonomous real-time feedback loops.
So these AIs are basically self-driving improvement engines.
Precisely, yeah. Agentic AI enables continuous self-learning. Sometimes people call it a data flywheel.
Yeah.
Unlike traditional SaaS that waits for, scheduled surveys or someone to analyze the data, these agents learn from every single interaction instantly. And this isn't just passive data collection either. Agents actively seek out new data, they query new sources, collect user feedback, analyze real-world outcomes all autonomously. They go way beyond traditional analytics by pulling in external data too, like social media trends or what competitors are doing.
And you mentioned real-time adaptation earlier. That sounds like a huge leap from weeks or months. How exactly does that immediate adjustment happen? What's the biggest impact you've seen from that?
It's totally transformative. These AI models can adjust their behavior immediately based on outcomes without waiting for the next product release cycle. So this means if a user struggles with a workflow, the AI might instantly say, reroute them or offer some context-specific help, maybe even tweak the product's underlying logic on the fly. The most significant impact, agility. Companies can respond to user needs and market shifts almost instantly. That was just unthinkable a few years back.
Okay, so this isn't just about faster feedback loops then. It sounds like it's fundamentally rewiring the business itself. What are the key areas where this agentic AI is really reshaping how SaaS companies understand their world?
You've nailed it. It's fundamentally redefining how businesses operate and interact with customers. See, traditional SaaS analytics are mostly reactive. They tell you what already happened. But with agentic AI, it shifts from reactive to proactive analytics. The AI continuously monitors market data, competitor offerings, social media sentiment, even emerging tech, to actually predict future trends and identify opportunities before they even become obvious to human teams.
That's a massive leap from just reporting on the past, and this leads directly to automated improvement then, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. Imagine AI analyzing user behavior, feature adoption, feedback, and then not just identifying issues, but actually recommending new features or improvements, or maybe even making small adjustments to product flows itself autonomously. This just dramatically accelerates the product improvement cycle. It lets product teams prioritize development based on actual, observed user needs, not just guesswork, and maybe even bypass some of that manual dev work.
Okay, so the focus of analytics also shifts, moves from being like interface dependent to outcome focused. In an agentic architecture, the core business logic shifts to the AI layer, right? Which orchestrates work autonomously. So analytics aren't just tracking clicks on a UI anymore, but directly measuring actual business outcomes. This brings up that huge question that's being debated everywhere. Does this mean Sizz is dead?
Yeah. It's definitely one of the hottest debates in enterprise tech right now. The consensus, though, seems to be leaning towards a profound transformation rather than like a complete replacement. Many experts think SaaS platforms will remain vital as systems of record, storing workflows, trusted data. While these new agents might take over the user interface layer, becoming the main way users interact.
So more of a hybrid integration. And we're already seeing this, right? Like Salesforce's Einstein AI acting as a co-pilot within CRM, or Adobe's marketing agents doing A/B tests on their own. The AI enhances, it doesn't just replace the existing SaaS, makes them smarter, not obsolete.
Precisely. That's a good way to put it. However, there's also the other view, famously articulated by Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella, that AI agents could fundamentally disrupt traditional applications by taking over the entire business logic layer, potentially acting as the main interface to these vast data stores. So that's the argument for a more radical shift where traditional apps become just, data backends for the AI.
Right. Well, regardless of how it shakes out, the rapid adoption of agentic AI is undeniable. I saw a projection that by 2025, 25% of enterprises using AI will be piloting agentic AI, rising to 50% by 2027. That's fast.
It is fast, and the impact is clear. Companies using these agentic CRM systems have seen, on average, something like a 20% increase in customer satisfaction and a 15% reduction in customer churn.
Wow, that's a significant ROI.
Definitely. And it also has profound implications for pricing models, that traditional per-seat licensing model. It's rapidly giving way to usage or outcome-based pricing. Companies pay for what the software actually delivers in terms of value. And this also means operational shifts, decision-making moving away from just IT departments to core business functions like finance, customer service. It requires SaaS vendors to become real partners in their clients' business goals.
So the bottom line is, the future of SaaS means deep integration of AI agents, outcome-based pricing, a bigger focus on industry-specific expertise that, AI alone can't replicate, and maybe a willingness for companies to self-disrupt their own models.
Absolutely. And it's interesting because traditional SaaS companies actually have a bit of a head start here. They already have the data ownership, the customer relationships. They're kind of uniquely positioned to evolve.
That makes sense. They're sitting on the data.
They are. But okay, beyond the whole agentic AI revolution, what does modern SaaS analytics look like right now, incorporating all these best practices? Because it's gone way beyond just tracking page views or simple website traffic,
Oh,
right?
totally. The new analytics paradigm is all about sophisticated behavioral tracking. We're talking event-driven analytics. And a huge game changer here has been auto capture technology. Tools like Heap, Posthog, they automatically capture all user interactions without needing manual setup first. Apparently, this leads to up to 25% more accurate data than old manual methods, which means you can do retroactive analysis, capture stuff you might have missed without ever having to instrument it in advance. Huge.
And with this explosion of data, defining a proper event taxonomy becomes crucial, like really critical. Best practice now is structuring events around the product-led growth, or PLG, funnel, acquisition, activation, retention, revenue, referral. And it's all about standardized naming conventions, consistency across teams, across products. We also see unified user identification becoming standard. Customer data platforms are processing over a trillion events daily, apparently, ensuring consistent tracking across complex user journeys, different devices, different touch points.
Okay, so this unified view feeds into more advanced behavioral analytics methods, cohort analysis, for instance. That's essential for understanding user behavior over time, isn't it? We often hear about average feature adoption rates, like around 24.5% across the industry, maybe 31% for HR tools, 22.6% for fintech insurance. Apparently, companies bringing in $5, $10 million revenue hit the highest rates, around 30.4%. But beyond just knowing these averages, what's the real insight? Like, if you're a fintech company at 18% adoption, is that a red flag? Or just normal variation?
No, it's absolutely a red flag for strategic focus. The real takeaway is that feature adoption isn't just a vanity metric. It directly correlates with product maturity and, crucially, revenue bands. If you're a fintech company below that 22.6% benchmark, your core value proposition might not be resonating, or maybe it's just not discoverable enough. And that's exactly where your analytics should guide immediate intervention. To improve that number, it highlights where you need to invest, basically.
Right. And user journey mapping has also evolved. It's not about just assuming how users will behave anymore, is it?
Not at all, no. It's about using data-driven methods, combining the qualitative insights to understand actual user behavior patterns, identifying those unexpected paths people take. And for product market fit, PMF, it's moved beyond just the old Sean Ellis test, the 40% or more users saying they'd be very disappointed without the product. Now, PMF includes things like retention stability, organic growth, and the depth of feature adoption. Are users not just using the product, but are they truly leveraging its most important features?
Okay, so with all this data, these new methods, what are the leading platforms people are using? Are there different flavors for different needs?
Absolutely. There's quite a range. For example, Posthog is really becoming the go-to open-source solution, especially for teams that are more developer-centric. They want full control, transparency. It offers a remarkably generous free tier, like 1 million events monthly, unlimited users, and it bundles everything: product analytics, session replay, feature flags, A/B testing, surveys, all in one place. Then you have Amplitude, that's more the enterprise powerhouse. Excels at really sophisticated user journey tracking, predictive analytics with machine learning, great for very large, complex data sets.
And what about others in that space?
Well, Mixpanel is still a leader for event-based analytics. Very intuitive interfaces, though its free tier recently adjusted. I think it's now 1 million events monthly, too. And then there's Statsig, which is emerging as this unified experimentation and analytics platform. They claim to process over 1 trillion events daily with like 99.99% uptime and boast 50% lower costs than some competitors for things like A/B testing.
Okay. And beyond those big players, are there any specialized platforms catching your eye, maybe for specific needs?
Yeah, definitely. We're seeing emerging platforms pop up. User Maven, for instance, is focused on privacy-first analytics using AI for insights. Quantimetric is aimed at enterprise experience analytics, offering automated struggle detection, which is pretty neat. And for subscription-focused companies, you've got tools like ChartMogul and ProfitWell. They provide specialized SaaS metrics, MRR, churn prediction, pricing optimization. Very focused.
So when you're choosing a platform from this diverse landscape, what are the most crucial things to consider?
The pricing model alignment is really key. Is it event-based, monthly tracked, user-based, session-based? Each has pros and cons depending on how your product is used. And integration capabilities are absolutely vital. Leading tools offer like 450-plus pre-built integrations, API-first architectures. You need it to fit into your existing stack. The trend is definitely towards consolidation, though. Companies seem to prefer platforms that can replace multiple tools rather than just adding another one to the pile.
Makes sense. And as companies collect all this increasingly granular data about user behavior, a crucial question comes up. How do they do this responsibly? Because as we're seeing, privacy isn't just a burden anymore, is it? It's actually becoming a clear competitive advantage.
It truly is, yeah. The regulatory landscape is just intensifying everywhere. GDPR enforcement, for example, average fines jumped 30% to 2.8 million euros. And remember, Meta got that massive 1.2 billion euro fine for insufficient cross-border data transfer safeguards. In the U.S., you've got 8 new comprehensive state privacy laws coming into effect in 2025. The focus has really shifted. It's not just about simple cookie banners anymore. It's about comprehensive privacy by design, emphasizing data minimization, enhanced user control by default.
So this raises a big question for companies. How do you actually implement analytics while staying compliant? Are there new approaches emerging?
Absolutely. Cookieless analytics platforms are maturing. Think Fathom Analytics, Plausible Analytics. They offer GDPR compliant tracking without consent banners, basically by avoiding collecting personally identifiable information, PII, altogether.
That sounds like a significant step forward for user trust, definitely. And I've heard more about server-side tracking lately. What's the advantage there?
Right, server-side tracking is gaining a lot of traction, mainly because it enhances privacy compliance and data accuracy. By processing data on servers rather than directly from the client's browser, companies can apparently achieve up to 25% better data quality compared to client-side. Plus, you get improved consent enforcement, and it's more resistant to ad blockers. And then integrating consent management tools like OneTrust or Google Consent Mode V2 allows for those granular consent options, compliant data collection, letting users really decide what they share.
And on the real cutting edge, what about advanced privacy-preserving techniques? Are those practical yet?
They're getting there. Techniques like differential privacy, which Google and Apple are already deploying for statistical analysis, are becoming practical. They let you get insights while mathematically protecting individual privacy. And data minimization strategies are essential too. Just collecting only necessary data, having rolling data retention policies, using progressive consent collection. It's all about building trust from the ground up.
So ultimately, responsible tracking means getting informed consent, anonymizing or aggregating data, handling it securely with strict access control, and avoiding that creepy tracking, right? Like making sure personal content is masked in session replays.
Exactly. Privacy isn't just about avoiding fines anymore. It builds user trust. It's a clear competitive advantage.
Okay, let's shift gears slightly. Moving to the underlying technical architecture, all these shifts we've discussed, they require some thoughtful decisions to make sure everything works and scales right, especially for a growing SaaS company.
Absolutely. The plumbing underneath matters a lot.
So when we talk about the tech underneath, you mentioned hybrid architectures. What exactly does that mean for how data moves? What kind of tools are we talking about?
Essentially, yeah, it's about combining two speeds of data processing. You have real-time streaming, using tools like Apache Kafka or maybe Flink to give you immediate updates on what's happening right now. That's crucial for those instant feedback loops. Then you combine that with batch processing, using systems like Apache Spark or cloud data warehouses for the deeper, broader historical analysis. This lets companies have both that instant responsiveness and a comprehensive view of everything that's ever happened. Best of both worlds, sort of.
And when it comes to actually implementing this, is server-side always the way to go, or is it more of a mix? It's often a mix. Server-side tracking definitely offers better data accuracy, privacy compliance, resistance to ad blockers, but it can add some complexity. So the optimal approach is often a combination. Client-side for immediate user interactions, events like clicks, you know, and then server-side for maybe revenue events or more sensitive tracking. API-first architectures also help here, supporting flexible, scalable data delivery, letting systems talk to each other smoothly.
And performance optimization must be critical. You're collecting so much data, you can't let your analytics slow down the actual product.
Exactly. That's a huge no-no. Efficient data collection through things like event batching, query optimization with proper indexing and caching, and infrastructure scaling using cloud-native architectures are all pretty standard practice now for growing SaaS companies. You just can't have insights at the expense of the user experience.
Okay, now let's connect all of this to product-led growth, or PLG, which has its own specific ways of measuring things. What are the key metrics here that stand out? Right, this is where it gets really actionable for those PLG companies. Product qualified leads, or PQLs, are super critical. These are users who show meaningful engagement with the product, indicating they're actually likely to convert. Not just anyone who signed up. Industry benchmarks suggest that somewhere between 20 to 40% of free trial users should probably become PQLs. It's about measuring real intent.
And the PLG flywheel model replaces those old linear funnels, right? What does that look like in practice?
Yeah, exactly. It replaces linear funnels with these circular frameworks. It tracks user progression from being a complete stranger all the way to becoming a champion, someone who not only uses your product, but actively advocates for it. And another key concept is natural rate of growth, or NRG. This measures your organic growth without any paid marketing or sales intervention. Leading PLG companies often achieve 20% or more NRG. It indicates really strong product market fit and maybe even some viral potential.
So when we look specifically at PLG, what are the most crucial, most actionable metrics that really jump out to you, the ones you absolutely have to track?
Okay, well, retention rate is foundational, obviously. It directly shows product stickiness. And cohort analysis is crucial here to see how different groups of new users are retaining over time. Daily and monthly active users, DAU/MAU, and their stickiness ratio also gauge overall engagement and growth. For example, a DAU/MAU ratio of 50% means your average user is active 15 days a month. That's a pretty strong indicator they're getting value.
And feature adoption rate, that seems huge too.
It truly is. It's the percentage of users who use a particular feature out of everyone who could potentially use it. If adoption is low, it points towards maybe discoverability issues or perhaps a lack of perceived value in that feature. There's that famous example from Buffer, right? They discovered their emoji picker, which wasn't even a core feature, was wildly popular just by looking at click tracking data. That led them to invest more in that little delighter feature because their analytics showed it actually mattered a lot to users.
Yeah. Yeah. Great example. Then we have conversion rates and funnel metrics, which obviously identify the biggest drop-offs in user journeys, like from free trial to paid. Crucial stuff. And time to value, TTV. How long it takes a new user to actually get the core value from the product. Best-in-class PLG companies apparently maintain activation rates of 20-40%.
And one of my favorites, rage clicks and error signals.
Okay.
We've all been there, right? Frantically clicking a button that doesn't work or hitting some kind of dead end. It feels like the app is just mocking you.
Exactly. And for product teams, those frustrated clicks are like pure gold. They're direct, unfiltered feedback about a broken user experience, often way more honest than a survey response could ever be. Fixing those isn't just about polish. It directly impacts retention and satisfaction. These are critical UX frustration signals. They show design or functionality problems that absolutely need fixing.
Totally agree. And finally, for expansion revenue optimization, getting more revenue from existing customers, companies are using customer health scoring. These are predictive models for churn and expansion opportunities, integrating usage data, engagement levels, support interactions, all of it. Tracking specific expansion indicators is also key, like are users hitting usage limits, exploring premium features, inviting colleagues, adopting advanced use cases. Companies that achieve 30% or more expansion revenue typically track these things really closely. It's all about spotting those growth signals within your existing customer base.
Okay, so that's a lot of metrics and methods. How do we actually make all of this happen? How do we truly integrate analytics into continuous improvement workflows so it's not just about collecting data?
Yeah, that's the critical step. It really starts with fostering a data-driven culture, and that has to be championed by leadership. Data needs to be visible, accessible to all teams, not just locked away with analysts. Fostering a shared understanding of the key KPIs across the company. It's about empowering everyone to see and understand the story the data is telling.
That makes a lot of sense. And it means integrating analytics into the day-to-day, like, agile rituals, right?
Precisely, yeah.
Yeah.
Incorporating insights into sprint planning, daily stand-ups, maybe OKR processes. It helps prioritize work based on actual user impact. So, for example, using data to prioritize fixing a bug on the mobile checkout flow because analytics show high drop-offs there. It stops analytics being an afterthought and makes it central to decision-making. What gets worked on next?
And running experiments, closing the loop that seems essential too. You can't just make a change and hope for the best.
No, you definitely can't. Using things like feature flagging and A/B testing frameworks, maybe PIE, prioritization, impact, ease, or RRF, reach, impact, confidence, helps test changes systematically. You measure the results, learn from the outcomes, good or bad. You're constantly iterating and improving based on real user behavior.
And ultimately, it comes down to connecting those product metrics to actual business outcomes. If you can't show how product improvements lead to tangible financial results, it's probably pretty hard to get executive buy-in for more resources.
Absolutely. Linking user metrics, adoption, engagement, retention to the larger KPIs like revenue and churn is non-negotiable. When product teams can clearly show, hey, feature adoption increased 20% among this cohort, and as a direct result, expansion revenue grew by X% in those accounts, that's undeniable. That's how you demonstrate real value and secure further investment.
And maybe most importantly, it's about being willing to iterate and embrace surprises, right? Data will challenge your assumptions. That unexpected pattern or that niche feature users suddenly love, like the Buffer emoji picker, that can reveal a new opportunity you never even anticipated.
Exactly. And if a metric drops after a release, don't panic. Treat it as a learning opportunity. Investigate what went wrong. Iterate on a fix quickly. It's all just part of that continuous learning cycle.
This really is a fundamental shift in how software learns and improves itself.
It truly changes the whole relationship companies have with their product and ultimately with their users.
So to kind of recap our deep dive here, we've seen this fundamental shift in SaaS analytics towards really sophisticated, privacy-compliant, often AI-powered behavioral tracking systems. And these systems are driving both product improvement and business growth. Mastering these shifts means treating analytics not as some separate function, but as an integrated capability, informing every aspect of product development, customer experience, and business strategy.
Absolutely. It's about creating that virtuous cycle. Mm-hmm. Deploy changes, measure their impact, learn from it, and then deliver an even better product experience next time. This, in turn, drives higher adoption, better retention, more customer satisfaction. And that becomes a key competitive advantage, especially in a crowded market.
So in a world with just more and more information coming at us, the future of competitive advantage isn't just about having data. It's about creating systems that learn, adapt, and improve themselves, continuously delivering more value, making the products we use smarter, more intuitive, and ultimately more aligned with what we truly need. So maybe the final thought for you, the listener, is how will you apply this understanding to the systems you interact with every day, and perhaps even to your own learning?